Hello and welcome to Floating Swimming Stories with me, Joe Minahane. My guest this week is Nicola Rayner. Nicola is the author of two works of crime fiction, The Girl Before You and You and Me, which is just out in paperback. Nicola took me to her favourite spot to swim, which is on Port Meadow in Oxford, swimming in the Thames just off of Fiddler's Island. Our conversation was free-flowing, just like the water. We covered everything from how water can affect fiction and non-fiction writing, its ability to ease anxiety, and in general, just how it makes us feel really, really good, even as the weather is starting to turn. You'll have to forgive the slightly iffy sound quality on the latest episode of Floating. We were recording outdoors under very, very windy trees, surrounded by swans, and as you'll hear, a rather loud bunch of crows. I really, really hope you enjoy the episode, and I'll be back at the end. So, we are by the banks of Isis Thames. What are we calling it today? Calling it Thames?
I quite like the Thames, yeah.
Let's call it the Thames.
It just feels less pretentious. we're not actually from Oxford,
are
we?
We're not even close to Oxford at the moment.
I think we can call it the Thames.
It's quite... It's the first day, proper day of autumn.
It is the first day. So yesterday was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, yesterday was summer and today it is not. And I suppose the equinox passed. But yes, we are in autumn and it's raining. But the water was warm-ish.
I thought it was lovely. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I've swum in a lot colder. This is my first river swim of the year because of the joys of the pandemic. And my first swim with another person.
What an honour.
So is this somewhere you have swum before?
It's somewhere I've swum once before. I think it was my first swim this year. I didn't get any swims in during lockdown because I don't live near wild water.
Yeah.
But I was absolutely desperate to swim because normally I'd swim pretty regularly in Hampstead Ladies Pond. Not quite every week, but pretty regularly. And yeah. Of course, that was all shut down. And I think it was July when I got here. I came to visit some friends in Oxford. And quite often, I imagine you do this too, when I'm wherever I'm going or whenever I'm going to see friends, I always think about where I could get a swim nearby. And this one, this one's very much planned. So I parked my car in Wolvercote and then walked all the way along the river. And initially I did a swim, it was a beautiful day, it was just a stunning July day. Initially I did a swim much nearer to the other end, further north than we are now. It's a bit shallower there and you get these little beaches along the river. And I was just so happy to be in the water. And it really wasn't deep, it was sort of knee deep or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was just still such a joy to be in the water for the first time this year. And then I had lunch with my friends in Jericho, and I had thought that was it, that I'd had my swim, but I came past where we are now. I think it's called Fiddler's Island, this part,
yeah.
Where the, I think it's Castle Mill Stream that we're looking at that kind of joins the Thames. And there's sort of a natural pond and an arched bridge. And it was just this beautiful day. All the families were out. The local kids were lining up on the bridge to jump into the water. It was just this like blissful scene from the 1950s. And so despite having to get home, I then had a very quick dip where we are now. And it was absolute joy.
It's lovely. It's just a gorgeous spot. It really deepens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's nice not to have been joined by this guy.
I know, we've
enormous
got...
Swan.
Swan.
I just watched it come from where we were swimming.
You
would have
made me a little nervous.
I was not in the water.
No.
Not my thing. I mean, it's just such a lovely spot. I mean, I know we've got the rope swing here as well, which was what we were saying.
Trust that rope.
It looks a little frayed.
It looks like you would have to take a leap.
To get to it, or you have to climb along the tree and then clamber down it. But yeah, so you came to uni here, didn't you?
So I went to uni here, and so there are parts of Oxford I know pretty well. I'm really embarrassed to say I only have one memory of coming to Court Meadow, which is just shameful for 4 years at Oxford. Absolutely shameful. And that time wasn't even by choice. I'd gone through this awful breakup in my final year. And then I got really ill shortly afterwards with flu. And I'd just been holed up in my room for weeks feeling miserable. And a couple of my friends came around to my room and were like, right, we're taking you for a walk. And they were quite keen, sort of outdoorsy people. And they marched me to Port Meadow. And I remember, because I was quite weak after flu, I remember really sort of dragging myself around. But it helped so much to be outdoors and to have a lovely long walk at that time. I don't know why I didn't do that sort of thing more often, but you know, I was young and I was a student and I was
urge to do the outdoorsy things at that age when you can have a lovely fun time.
Different priorities, don't you? Yeah. You have different priorities, and I was busy either working hard or partying hard, and not much in between, really, not really taking care of myself or enjoying nature or anything like that. So
you didn't swim down here at that time?
I didn't, no, and it makes me sad because the river is such a big part of Oxford life. It's such a big part of how Oxford is presented. You know, when you think about the rowing and punting and that May Day ritual of all the students jumping off the bridge, and Alice in Wonderland, and I think Iris Murdoch was a big swimmer here as well. So Oxford has all these sort of myths and kind of images that relate to the river. It's such a big part of Oxford, and yet I don't know, I didn't really take advantage of it at all. But then it's nice to revisit as an adult, or you know, later on in life and do things now.
How come the swimming has become a thing?
Well, Joe, that's because of you. No, it's entirely because of you. I read Floating. I'm trying to think which year it would have been. 2017?
That's when it came out,
yeah. I might have read it the following year, actually. I'm trying to think when we came to see you in Brighton, and you very kindly gave us a copy.
Oh, that was a year after then, maybe.
So it would have been 2018. I read it then, and obviously thoroughly enjoyed it, really, really loved it. But also was very interested because, and it's not something we had ever talked about, to read about your anxiety and how it had helped with that. And it's something that I have sort of long-term suffered from as well.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm always interested in different tools that help with anxiety, and not just any one thing necessarily. I find it, you kind of need an array of things.
You need an array of things, an arsenal.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just rely on one thing.
No, exactly. But I think for that reason I thought, well, you know, by that stage I'd learned about yoga, I'd learned about meditation, I'd done some CBT, I exercise pretty regularly, but I thought, well, this could be something, and also something that sounds really fun and pleasurable that might also help. And I think very, very soon after reading your book, I went to Hampstead Mixed Pond. Actually, I think I went on Midsummer's Day, really, really hot day, and I hadn't been freelance very long. So it was one of those, you know, when you have those moments when you're freelance, you're like, I really won this. Like, I've really beaten the system.
I can do this.
It was like a Wednesday or something, and it was a very hot June day, and I just took myself for a swim on my own, and it was just absolute heaven. And I really just loved it.
The Mixed Pond is great for that because of Parliament Hill, you get no phone reception there as well.
Yeah.
No one could get you.
Just heavenly. No, it really, really was. And I didn't find it difficult. I thought I might find it difficult getting in for the first time, and I didn't really at all.
I think once you've got over that initial bit and you realise that it's all right, then it's a place that you can do as you please. Like, the thought of getting in a river like this, like to me, 10 years ago, would have been like...
Yeah, you'd think, you would look at people and think you're mad getting in, but...
And just, like, lowering yourself into, like, quite murky water through, you know, tree roots.
Yeah.
And just having to deal with weeds and everything, and now it's like, that's all right.
Oh, it's the buzz of it, though, isn't it? It's just... Yeah, I think it's quite addictive.
Oh, massively so. Yeah, I mean, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to swim throughout lockdown because of living right on the water. And that has been just an absolute lifesaver. It's a complete game changer.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I try not to sort of get too obsessive about it, but the addiction is real.
Yeah.
And I think it's... But then what's interesting is it's not just the addiction to... the water, to the swimming, but to the cold.
Yeah.
That's a really fascinating thing. So I was chatting with a therapist about this recently, and he was like, you know, cold showers can do that, to set off the same responses, but yeah. obviously having a cold shower is not quite the same yeah. as getting into a river on like an admittedly quite wet now.
It's not a terribly nice day at all.
September day. But it's not giving you the same, you know, nature responses.
No, exactly. I think there are different elements to it, aren't there? There's the cold, there's sort of communing with nature, a little bit of exercise. You see the world from different views.
I think that is the thing, yeah. It's that frog's eye view that Roger Deakin talks about. That's the thing that I always come back to. It's like you're looking at something from a completely different angle and different perspective, which is really good for when you get out and, you know, you're having to deal with things in your day-to-day life that yeah. are stressful or whatever, for whatever reason. To be able to look at something with a completely fresh perspective is really, really powerful and important.
Absolutely, and it forces you to be present, which if you're an anxious person is something that you probably yes. struggle with.
Yeah, that is so true.
When you're swimming, especially when it's cold, you don't have any choice but to be in your body and to be in the moment. And I like that. I really like that it forces you to do that. You can't, you know, you're not thinking about your to-do list when you're in the water.
No, because you're like, your mission there is just survival.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Quite a lot, and that's really important.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about the importance of water and your writing.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that reading your new book and read your previous one as well, like reading the previous one, that it's so vital to
absolutely
your work. That why is that? Why is that? And why do you think in your particular genre of like crime thriller writing that is?
It's so interesting. I mean, I noticed kind of quite late on that both my books have water on the cover. Water plays a big part in the role of both of the books. I mean, there are different answers. I grew up in Wales. In my mum's house, the River Mono is at the bottom of the garden.
Yeah.
And it's always been a presence in our life, and sometimes a benign twinkling presence in the summer, and sometimes a far less benign presence in the winter when it floods, flood, exactly,
yeah.
And it's, you know, you get very, very strong currents, and it just becomes this sort of very fast flowing, deep, murky, quite frightening thing. And similarly, Crick Howell, where my mum had a business, the Usk again, if you know Crick Howell at all, is very much a presence, and this lovely presence in the summer where people picnic and swim, and then in the winter it floods the town, and it's very, very stressful and worrying. And then we used to have holidays in Pembrokeshire when we were children, and it's still somewhere I go with my husband now, and it's a hugely important place in my life, probably the most important place in my life, to be honest. It's where my husband proposed, it's where a lot of The Girl Before You is set. I don't know why it is so important. I mean, why do places sort of capture us like that? The sea is, again, generally, you know, it's quite a wild thing in Pembrokeshire. And the place I like to go particularly, a beach called Drewston Haven, it's the currents are very, very strong.
Yeah.
The waves are very strong. You have to pick when you swim quite carefully, and you have to check with people before you swim. And I had with my sisters and some family friends, we had a very scary experience when we were children. And again, this is an experience that features in The Girl Before You, of being dragged out by, I think, possibly what might have been a riptide or something.
Yeah.
And the whole group of us, I mean, sort of 6 or 7 children were dragged out. And it was absolutely terrifying, like a really sort of formative experience for me. I still remember it very, very clearly, that feeling of not being able to breathe and the waves coming kind of thick and fast and not being able to find my feet and just sinking, even at the age of, I was then 11 or 12 or whatever it was, that, you know, that's it, this is my life, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, which is terrifying. And then there was a French au pair who was working with our family friends, who wandered up to the hotel and told my mum and our family friend's mum, the children are drowning. Which I can't, like... I can't even imagine at the
time.
You've taken that experience into art.
It's fine. You know, you've got to think everything is a story.
You've got to tell yourself that. But what's interesting to me now is that I absolutely love the water. I crave it. I miss it when I'm not by it. You know, so it's. Yeah. I find those joint feelings of being frightened by water and also just being drawn to it. It's a really interesting mixture, isn't it?
That's really strange because I have so much of that because I was terrified of the water. I had as a kid, I had some like really horrific like swimming lesson experiences and I don't ever remember particularly being confident around it. But then my dad always tells me that I was. Like, you know, when we were kids and we used to go to the Lyme Regis a lot and like you'd swim along that stretch of the Dorset and Devon coast. And it's like, you just chuck yourself in all the time.
Yeah.
But there is always that sense of fear of the unknown. I think there's, you know, it's one of those things where I'm always, in a way, I feel strangely more stressed when I'm in the sea and I can see the bottom.
Yeah.
I was having a swim across one of the chalk reefs, yeah, right, just down from Brighton towards Saltling the other day, and it was a beautiful sunset swim, but I was like, looking straight down and I'm like, I can see everything that's going on here.
Yeah.
And then I start thinking, then like my mind starts, that's when my mind starts to go, when it's murky.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, I was in with my son the other day, he's 3, gets on my back and then demands that I stay in the water for like an hour, by which point I am like shriveled.
Yeah.
I'm like, just go away, go!
I know, it's crazy,
like
children can do that.
Please, let me out, just let me out. And like, he just doesn't feel it. And he understandably gets freaked when he can't see the bottom. So we've gone in on murky days and he's just like, no, we're off. But like on a clear day, he's happy as Larry. And it's like constant questions about, are there octopuses here? I'm like, yeah, a long way over that way. Are they jellyfish? Yeah, but like, don't worry about them. And then like, chatting, not telling that a friend of mine, she got stung quite badly on her ankle last week.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. But it's just a real, it's interesting you mentioned that sort of fear and, the fright. I hadn't really considered that for a long time. And I suppose
think a bit of fear is good because you have to respect the water. You can't get in any conditions. You have to think about, safety and things. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it can be a very helpful thing.
But it's interesting that that then comes back into the writing as well.
Yeah.
So that sort of those experiences and that fear. Because that is such a... But it's a thing that a lot of people have as well, right? You know, I suppose it's a thing that a reader can easily relate
to. Absolutely. I think it's really atmospheric water. I think having stories by water can really add a bit of atmosphere. In fact, both big places in The Girl Before You... St Anthony's, which is a fictional Northumberland town, university town, and where the sisters grow up in Pembrokeshire. Both places have the sea, and then there's a swimming pool in You and Me, and a very dark incident in the swimming pool, and then Whitby in You and Me as well, which is obviously a seaside town as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are a lot of locations by water. I really do feel like it adds atmosphere. I'm a huge fan of Daphne du Maurier, and I grew up reading her novels when I was a teenager. And of course, Cornwall and the sea there play a huge, huge part in books like Rebecca. And the other thing I say that water is just such a gift for plots, because if you want people to go missing, and especially if you want people to go missing and there be, as in the case of The Girl Before You, there to be a question as to whether they've really drowned or whether they are somewhere else. Water's, it sounds really dark, so water's great for that, but it is, it's not like a death where you might see a body, you know, it can add a question mark over whether someone's gone or not, which in fiction, of course, is very helpful.
But it's interesting because in the start of You and Me, you have like a scene on a tube platform where you're using, the language you're using is mostly related to water, to swimming.
It just, I don't even know I'm doing that sometimes, because it was very much a language I used in The Girl Before You, and I talked about tides and things kind of being returned to you by water, you know, a lot. And it was interesting that I kind of didn't mean to do it again in You and Me, because you don't want to repeat yourself too much, but it still found its way in.
It's funny how those things that I always tell myself I'm not going to write about swimming again, and then I just can't help it, and it just keeps coming back to those same things, those same themes. And obviously I write non-fiction, but like, it's that thing of not being able, in a weird way, it's like I try and get away from it and I can't.
it's interesting. I was listening to Kylie Reid talk on a podcast recently, and she was saying that you should write to your obsessions. And
yeah.
I think that's so true. There are things that I will always come back to, you know, power and relationships, often the imbalance of power and sexual relationships and siblings and, yes, water. And there are all these things that I think I will return to again and again, and you can't, you know, I can't really escape them. And maybe I shouldn't escape them. Maybe you should sort of lean into that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think there was a sense for me, having come out of the back of Rip Floating, that I was, we're right by an RAF base, aren't we? Flames going on as well. So, that I was going to try and do something completely different, and now I've found that it's just better to have that as an aspect of everything I write about, because it just, it's always something that if I've gone off to do something, it's where I go back to do all my thinking.
Yeah.
And it's where I go back to do my best, sort of assessments
you,
of
you
life.
Write so well about it as well, like if that's something you've given so much thought to and so much time to, then
it's weird, because I always thought that you didn't, once you'd written about it, there wasn't much more to say, but actually that's not necessarily true. It's like, I think my idea of writing about swimming is that it doesn't necessarily have to be travelogue, that it can be like a quite a creative and quite a experience that doesn't have to just talk about the specifics of, like, you know, here's me putting my foot down over this, you know, getting into the river, or you know, pushing off into a stroke. It's everything that's going on around you at the same time, and no swim is ever the same. I mean, even if, you know, you came back here every single day for a year, every swim would be different, even if you swam the same route.
No, it's true.
You know, that's the joy of swimming wild, right? Rather than, you know, going to the pool. Much as I love that, it's not affording you the same thing, and also it's not doing the same thing. It's like we were saying, this, I wouldn't count this, I'm not doing this for physical exercise.
No, I'm very aware of that, it's very much a sort of a potter.
It's always a potter for me. I'm not, I mean,
the way I do it. Yeah.
But it's strange, because, like, I think pottering in a river is one thing, but in the sea, I see lots of different kinds of swimmers. And I find that really interesting, because it's such a varied pursuit. And I think I spoke with Amy Dittrott about this, and how, you know, I watch people go past, like, toe floats and timers, and, you know, they're counting their stroke, and, like, you know, and they're doing the long distance swim. But I have the sometimes I will put on, like, a hat and goggles and do that. But actually this summer, I think especially this summer, I've just not wanted to. I've just wanted to be in that moment and just look around and see what's going on.
Yeah.
And just put, and just have a potter.
Yeah. No,
I've really lost the urge for that. It's really strange. I went through a phase of really enjoying it, and it just seems to have gone this year. And I think a lot of that is related to sort of pandemic stuff and just wanting to have a little bit of a moment out rather than everything being the exercise,
exactly.
You know?
And I think this is something that you dealt with in floating. I think one has to be wary of, if you have those slightly sort of type A personality tendencies of making everything into, like, work or an exam or a project, or, you know what I mean? I need goals here. And I think I'm conscious of the fact there are some things in my life I really need to keep just for sheer pleasure, and swimming is one of them. Like, I try not to bring those kind of tendencies to swimming, because
I have done in the past, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the joy of having a hobby, is that it can just be done, you know.
Yeah, and it's just done for the sheer joy of it.
Yeah.
I think that was, like, strangely, when I finished researching floating, I went for a swim with some friends, and there were friends that I had swum a lot with for the book. And when I went with them, I would normally leave and then spend, like, you know, my train trip back to London writing notes, and I just didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh yeah, you can just enjoy this, but, like, on its own terms.
Yeah.
You know. And I think that speaks to something so interesting, especially now, is that, you know, enjoying something on its own terms rather than it being, like, productive, or, like, you've got to use all this time we've been gifted over lockdown productively. It's like, no, just enjoy it on its own terms.
There was so much talk of that, wasn't there? You know, and a lot of, in the writing community, there was a lot of, like, discussion about whether now is the perfect time to write or not. And a lot of writers have been finding it extremely difficult to write. Certainly, I mean, perhaps less so now, we're so far into it. But early on, a lot of people, you know, a very stressful situation is not an ideal situation for writing.
I weirdly wrote quite a lot, mostly because I had no, being a travel journalist during the pandemic is like really not a good place to be. I ended up writing because it was just that I needed something to do every day that was like work and like just to keep my mind sort of busy.
Yeah.
And that has become something about nature and fatherhood and anxiety and swimming. But it's still not really a thing. Like, I don't really know what it is. It's just something that occasionally I just chip away at.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't have... That, to me, is how I'm trying to view writing these days. It's more of, like, this is my... Yeah, it's just there's no pressure on it.
Yeah.
To take those parameters away is actually really freeing, because that's how I wrote Floating.
And let the work develop naturally and
absolutely. Like, writing your way into something is really, really important. But then, like you were saying earlier about deadlines, it's just that not always possible to do that.
It's not always possible. And you know, there are different projects out there. I mean, I wrote You and Me Under Contract. I wrote it quite quickly, certainly a lot more quickly than I'd written The Girl Before You. I had years and years for that because it was my first novel, and that's quite often the case. And your second one, you suddenly have to write in a year, which is a very different thing. I'm not entirely complaining, because I think that discipline was really good for me. I think it was really good to learn that I could do that. I think that sense of urgency helped with the plot, actually. However, for my third book, it's quite interesting to see where something develops again. I'm just starting now. And like you, at the moment, it's sort of a thing, an idea that's sort of unfolding. And I guess I'll see where it goes.
But that relates really interestingly to the water and the swimming, though, right? Because you're just like, well, you just see which way you want to take rather than having to follow any
particular
line.
And I think it's hard. I think if you're an anxious person, I think that can be quite hard, because sometimes you want answers and you want certainty and you want, you know, what kind of book is this? What are you? How are you going to...
tell me how to write you. I'll do it. Just show me.
And I think, you know, that going with the flow, it's a nice water analogy, can be
it's not easy.
Quite hard.
Not easy.
Yeah,
I'm, you know, I sort of struggle with that. And I think I put myself, or have been guilty in the past, of putting myself under an inordinate amount of pressure to, you know, to tick those boxes and to, you know, for everything to be fine. But when you just realise that it'll write, you know, I tend to find that once I sit down, things write themselves, and that, like, something comes. And that those, even if you only write like 100 words, or 50 words, those words didn't exist, however, like when you sat down.
Yeah.
So give yourself a break almost, and just be like, it's okay, you made something that, that didn't exist before, and you did that.
Exactly, and the overthinking doesn't always help with the writing. I find I have to sort of separate off the overthinking voice from the...
I can imagine that's very, very hard when you're trying to plot, you know, a crime novel, and you know, that which is an incredibly difficult thing to write, and like, you know, to have all of your plans ready, right? It's not like you're just, I'm just going to sit and write, I'm just going to keep writing until it all finishes.
No, you have to be quite careful. You have to be quite careful with the structure, obviously, of crime novels. And I'm not actually a natural plotter. Some crime novelists are very, very good at spreadsheets and chapter plans and those sorts of things, whereas I think I'm more of what they call a pantser, like a flying by the seat of your pants when it comes to writing. And just like with both my novels, I wrote these first drafts that were very, very different from later drafts. And in You and Me, I wrote a completely different book, actually, with my first draft, and then started...
Oh, wow, really? And then just got the chisel out and just chipped away at it?
Yeah, and then more or less completely rewrote it for the second draft, which, I mean, obviously then got reworked a lot before the final draft, but anyway, the second draft much more closely resembles what it ended up being. But I don't feel the first draft was wasted in the way that I don't feel any writing is wasted in a way, because I was exploring the world, I was meeting the characters, I was getting to know them, and if I hadn't done that, I don't feel like it would have ended up being the book it is. So you just have to be prepared. You have to be prepared to kill your darlings, really. It's that old cliche, really, that the stuff you're writing might not make the final draft, but that it's still
that everything is worth. Yeah, everything is worthwhile. And it's quite that's quite a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah.
And this idea of, like, you know, sort of letting go of it while you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there's been so much of that that I've been writing, this thing called By the River Column that I'm doing, and just sort of trying to write about things that I'm not used to writing about, like family and that kind of thing. that normally I'm like, oh, I've got to check myself and keep myself back.
Yeah.
But you just have to let it all go.
How do you find that with writing about your family? The things that you want to share and things you don't want to share?
Things I try not to share. I mean, yeah. I'm more interested about my relationship with my kids and the outdoors. I mean, and I say my kids, like my daughter's 4 months old, so like really it's not, you know, her and I don't really have that much of experience of that. I mean, admittedly, I had her out in the park the other day and she was just lying under the trees having a lovely time, which was just like, you know, full like heart, like going. It was wonderful. But it's more my son who's like just turned 3, and you know, I've been taking him to the sea, as I mentioned, and that has been absolutely incredible because he's just full of questions at the minute. So it's just all those wanting to know about what exists under the water, what the birds are doing, or you know, why trees make a sound, or that, you know, and all of those kind of things. And I'm enjoying writing about those things because, like, but then I'm also conscious that I don't want to give up too much of his own world. Like, I don't post pictures of him or anything on social media. I'm very cautious about that. And, you know, I know that if I don't know what's going to happen with this writing, whether it'll ever get published or not, but I don't want to put him in that position of, like, you know, 10 years down the line, oh, your dad wrote this about you.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you know, that's memoir, right? So you know,
nice,
and I write memoir. So
exactly,
you know,
exactly. It's a nice thing as well.
Oh, and it's all, and it's all full of love. You know, it's all about love.
Yeah.
You know? That's the thing. It's all of my love for him and his, you know, and his world opening up and my, you know, being on hand to help with that.
Yeah.
I think that has been, it was just such a thrill to be out on the seafront the other day, and he's like, I want to go in there, and he points at the sea, and I'm like,
yes,
you do. Like, run back over the road and get everything.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful thing. My my nephew, who's 4, is a fellow book lover, and I really love reading with him. There's something really nice about that, those shared passions and families, where you're like, yes, someone who gets it. And he's always, he's just, ever since he was tiny, he's just always loved books.
It's a thrill. I don't know, we'll see. I mean, I don't imagine that he'd have fancy getting in the river today. It's you know, fair enough.
Not yet, but
you know, he's had the baby survival swimming lessons, which seem to have gone in one ear and out the other by now, but you know.
And actually, I was looking at Floating again last night, because it's been a little while since I read it. And I was looking at the end of it, and it's you and your dad, isn't it? Isn't he pulling you out of the water? Oh my God, Joe,
It's a lovely thing.
And a lot of that was about shared experiences with the family.
Yeah, it's
and
funny,
friends,
the
wasn't
book
it?
Was
yeah.
about shared experiences, but I've become like quite the solo swimmer.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, like, do you swim with friends that...
No, because no one will swim with me. No, that's not true. When I go to the ladies' pond, I usually go with a friend.
Okay.
I've got a friend who lives in Hampstead, and we are good at having a picnic afterwards.
Perfect.
And things like that. So that's a big part of it. And then recently, I converted another friend. It's like a cult.
We'll do this.
Exactly, and that was fab. My husband will go in the sea with me at Pembrokeshire. Because he likes a little bit of, I mean, bodyboarding, that makes it sound good. We are both hopeless. I mean, properly hopeless.
Who cares? It's not
but,
about that. I bet you
but
feel
we do.
Amazing at
we,
the
we
moment.
We do. We got this bodyboard that's a bit of a sort of family joke because we bought it on the last day of a holiday once in Pembrokeshire. And now we feel like every time we go, we have to take it with us.
It has to go in the back of the car.
And it's like, it's made for like children or something. It's not very big. And so we both take it into the sea and we take turns and catch the waves with it. So he'll do that. I think partly it's that incentive of sort of almost like playing a game, or you know what I mean, like having fun. He will not, I mean, looking at this, he would
this
not get
not be
in.
His
no,
vibe.
No. He feels a cold as well, and he's just not, no, he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the shared experience thing is so important. It's funny because I've got really like deep into it being my own thing, but I miss, you know, having that with other people. And, you know, I could have that in Brighton, but I think
it's nice having a natter, actually. I mean, you can't always do that in the sea so much because of the noise, but like, These conditions are pretty calm, and we could sort
it's
of...
It's just lovely to be able to... I mean, having said that, a friend of mine was in the water the other day, and I was on the beach looking with my boy and hers, and she was pointing back, and like just chatting with me from about, for whatever reason, the way that the wind was blowing, she was able to just chat from about 100 yards away and tell me, look, there's a crane moving behind, and the boys are like going absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
There's a right by a building site. But, it's really... I do miss that, you know, head out, having a chat,
exactly
that kind of thing. And it's just that, like you say, especially at this time of year, as things start to turn, and in like early spring, it's like the shared endeavour of like, right, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Like we, you know, if I go on my own to the river in winter, not going to happen.
No, exactly. If I go with someone else, you've got to do it.
You know, for safety as well, but like also just for that, like come on, like
no, you're
hand
right,
on the small
actually.
Of your back, just in we no, go, let's
you're
get
right.
it done.
Kind of keeping faith, you know. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But it's a special thing.
Do you, I'm really curious about Hampstead Men's Pond.
Yes.
Because the ladies' pond, like, it is so sociable. So, and you will find a lot of, as I say, I normally go with one other friend. We will do kind of our kind of very dignified breaststroke around doing a lap. But we'll also always have, like, a really good chat while we do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Does that happen in the men's pond, or is it?
When I have been with friends, yeah. It does. But I tend to find that the men's is a bit more. I tend to only go to the men's when the mix isn't open, which means that it's a bit colder, so therefore it's perhaps a bit more serious, as in like, right, we've just got to get in. I mean, there's a real sense of community there. I think the last time I went there, I was watching these Hasidic guys doing pull-ups in full like wool suits on like the hottest day of the year.
Wow.
Load of cabs, like you get, it's old school London as well, so you get a lot of old like cabbies and stuff there that, you know,
yeah,
it's that, it's got a really nice vibe to it. But I think the location of the mixed pond just does it for me.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get.
There's something about it.
To...
And I know, you know, from by all accounts, the ladies' pond is like
heaven.
Some kind of paradise.
It is, I'm afraid.
It's absolutely fine.
It is, I'm afraid. It's just absolute heaven. Yeah, and
It's strange. You don't tend to, you know, if I go with a friend and we'll sort of swim and then chat and then we'll sort of split and then come back together at events. But yeah, I mean, actually the mix I always do, because you get out to the far rope and then you just sort of swim along and just have a chat.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You hear such interesting snippets of conversations. Yeah.
See, that's the best thing about it, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's always, swimmers have always got interesting things to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's a good place to put the world to life. And look, thank you so much for taking the time and for bringing me here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank
you for getting me into all of this.
Hey, no problem at all. Thank you for the books. And so when's You and Me out in paperback? Is it out in paperback now?
So You and Me is out, it's out on the 1st of October.
Okay.
So we're about sort of 10 days from where we are now. But yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And available at all good
bookstores. All good bookstores, exactly.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with it all. And thank you ever so much for taking part.
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg.
I really hope you enjoyed my chat with Nicola. It was such a wonderful swim, especially because the weather had turned and we really, really had to G ourselves up to get in and get past the swans and through the quite murky depths of the Thames out into the lovely pond where we were able to take in the view looking over the meadows and the cows and down through the bridge past the boats. It was really, really quite a gorgeous spot. I'll be back with more episodes soon. Obviously, things are getting a little bit cooler and a little bit harder to get in the water. So hopefully I can G you all up and get you ready for some autumn and winter swims in the near future. In the meantime, happy swimming.